Parshas Veschanan, Tavshin Samaches, Shabbos Nachamu. Our subject today is the Nechama, but we won't get to speak about the Nechama till the very end. What we are going to revisit and then build upon is the concept that we have spoken about, which is the crime, the moral and intellectual crime that we were guilty of, and which is therefore forever immortalized in the structure of the Eicha, which is that we put our mouths before our eyes, peh before the ayin. This goes back to the Meraglim, but first we'll just remind ourselves that in the Megillah of Eicha, which goes according to Aleph Beis, except for the first chapter, chapter 2, 3, and 4, the Aleph Beis goes out of order when it gets to the Ayin and the Pei. The Pei comes before the Ayin. And we are taught that this is done on purpose by Yirmiyahu as a hint to Klal Yisrael that the whole guilt was that they put the Pei before the Ayin, the mouth before the eye, which we will speak about from a philosophical perspective. Now, our question is, where is the origin of that sin of putting the Peh before the Ayin? And we know it goes back to the Meraglim. If you look through Eicha, by the way, you will notice, interestingly, that almost always where the Pasuk corresponding to the Peh or the Pasuk corresponding to the Ayin is found, the Pasuk corresponding to the Peh speaks about the Peh, and the Pasuk corresponding to the Ayin speaks about the Einayim. And the result, the disaster that comes from putting the Peh before the Ayin, except in Perek Aleph, where he begins by putting it in order and putting the Ayin first, and he says in the first Pasuk on the Ayin, Al Eila Ani Bochia, these are the things that I cry about. And we've spoken about the concept of bechi. We've spoken about the concept of crying, which originates also by that night after the Meraglim gave their bad news to the Jewish people. We said that when a person cries, their eyes and their mouth are out of commission. They can't see straight, which is exactly an expression of their sin, that they didn't see right. They can't speak a coherent sentence, which is exactly an expression of their sin, which was they didn't speak correctly. They didn't say with the truth and the real, in the moral truth, maybe the physical reality they expressed, but not the moral truth behind it. So the fact is that the eyes and the lips betrayed the truth, betrayed therefore the people in the end, and the tikkun is crying, which takes the eyes and the mouth out of commission. Incoherence, chaos. In other words, the person actually experiences viscerally the confusion, the sense of hopelessness that they brought to the world by misleading everyone, by speaking what wasn't right, what wasn't in order, and by causing people to therefore see things out of perspective. They brought confusion and chaos to the world. They made lies out of truths, bad out of good, hopelessness out of hope and optimism, and therefore, as a punishment, they're put into a situation where they must cry, and they experience viscerally where the eyes don't work, and the mouth doesn't work, and nothing is coherent, and everything is confused, and that is bechi, that is crying. But at the same time, the bechi is also a tikkun. It allows, in a sense, cleanses the sin, and allows a person to, after the cry, reevaluate things from a proper perspective, which is why, as we've said, that sometimes there's a certain comfort and a feeling of composure that one regains after a serious cry. Now, the first time that the ayin is found, it's found in order, and it says, Al Eile Ani Bochia, these are the things I'm crying about, and that's the proper order, to cry about the things that were so taken out of order, and then comes the pay, and the pay says, "Parashat Zion biyadeh ein menachem la." She stretched out her hands, but nobody would comfort her, and that's the results of what we've done. So the first parak is in order, but if you go back and then go and look at Perek Beis, Gimel, and Dalet, you'll see a lot of references to the fact that we're punished through other people's misspeaking about us. In other words, patsu alayich pihem, they opened their mouth against you, your enemies. Said all kinds of lies about you. They said all kinds of they attributed to you all kinds of motives and purposes, that you would rebel against Rome, that you would rebel against the king, that you were a dangerous force, that you were dangerous to the peace of the empire, that's why they had to attack you. They said all kinds of things about you that brought the war on. And those things weren't true. And we live today in a world where everybody says everything with impunity and spins a story completely out of control, and it isn't true. That's the punishment of putting the peh out of order. And many of the psukim, Perek Gimel, patsu aleinu pihem, they open their mouths against us. And then palge mayim teradna, buckets, you know, rivers of water, my eyes were forced to cry. These are the pay words. And some of the ayin words that you're going to find, asa Hashem asher zimam Hashem, did what he had threatened. Eini nigra, my eyes will pour out water and never stop. Einai olalala nefesh, my eyes see what's happening and cause pain to my heart. These are the references of the pez and the ayin. So when we go back to the original cause is the miraglim. Where do we find the Chazal from the Medrash that actually talks about putting the peh before the ayin? That they put their mouths before the eyes. This is the question. Where is that Medrash? What part of the Meraglim story? Well, if you look in Perek Yudalit in Shalach, it says, Vatisok Pasagalef, Vatisok Kol Ha'eda, Vayitnu Es Kolam Vayibchu Ha'am Balayla Hahu. So they all raised their voices and cried on that night. And we spend time discussing night and its association with crying. That it's much more conducive to crying. It's a feeling of abandonment, a feeling of aloneness, hopelessness, not knowing the direction to take. We won't go back there, but we showed examples, many examples of crying in nighttime and their connection. In any case, on that pasuk, Shalach, Yadalit Aleph, where they cried all night, that's where you find the Medrash. But the Medrash specifies what was it that made them cry so much. Well, just go back to the pasuk before. That's what triggered the whole hysteria. Was the pasuk before Perek Yud Gimel pasuk Lamed Gimel? This is what created the problem. The Meraglim said, "Visham ra'inu et hanafilim." We saw those ones who had fallen. That's a whole concept in and of itself, what fallen means, but they saw the giants. B'nei Anak, min hanafilim. We saw the giants, the children of the giants, which they were terrified by. Now look at the next word. V'nihi be'einenu kachagavim. And we were in our own eyes like grasshoppers. Chagavim, a huge word here. We were in our own eyes like grasshoppers. Now that's a legitimate expression of how intimidated they felt. Okay? But why grasshoppers? Any type of bug. But they're expressing that they felt completely intimidated, which, by the way, they shouldn't have because Hashem was on their side. But they're saying, despite what we should have, that we should have been brave and courageous like Kalev and Yeshua, we were intimidated. We felt like grasshoppers. Why grasshoppers? But here's the next part. V'chein hayinu be'enehem, and so we were in their eyes. Now, how did they know how the giants were looking at them? How did they know that the giants thought they were chagavim? So the only lie they said in the entire report about Eretz Yisrael, nothing they said was untrue except these three words. They do not know how the giants saw them. They know there were giants. They know there were cities fortified up to the heavens. True. They saw the huge fruit. They saw that the land was hyper. We've spoken about this. The land was a chai, alive. That if the power didn't go into Ruchnius, into the Avos and the Imahos, those type of giants, it would go into the Gashmius. They saw that. They saw the power of the land. Everything was true. But what was not true were these three words. We were like grasshoppers in their eyes. And that's the only three words in the story that you can say about them, that they spoke about what their eyes had not seen. They spoke with their mouths what they hadn't seen with their eyes. That's the only three words. Everything else that they spoke about, they had seen. So when Chazal indict them and say, they put the peh before the ayin, this is it. Okay? They didn't see, they didn't know for a fact that the giants thought of them as chagavim. That is a great part of the crime. Seeing the perspective wrong. So, here's where the Chazal comes in. Chazal Medrash HaGadol, this are the words. V'ni be'inenu kechagavim, we were in our own eyes like chagavim. Efshar lomar shadavar ze'emes. You could say this is true. Sha'adam ro'es atzmo, a person sees himself, and he isn't reporting how he sees himself. V'ma sha'omru, but what they said. V'chein hayinu be'inehem, and we were in their eyes. Vadai, okay? That for sure, that can't be proven. Vadai shebiyado v'amru v'chiminei hein yodim mahaya b'libam shel achirim. Did they know what was in the hearts of others? Lefichach, therefore, at motze, now you find, this is the reason, therefore, kishakonin Yirmiyahu al Yisrael Echa, when he made the kinna of Echa for Klal Yisrael, the Lamentations, v'hochichan b'maseim, and he was really trying to give them tochacha, musar, rebuke for what they had done, okay, for their evil deeds, b'maseim haram, hiktim peh la'ayin. He put the peh before the ayin, Yirmiyahu and Echa, as a form of musar, to see the remez l'maraglim. It's a remez to the Meraglim, to Amar, Rabba, Amar Rav Yochanan. Rabba says the name of Rav Yochanan. Mipnei ma hiktim peh la'ayin. Why is the peh before the ayin in Echa? Mipnei ha-Meraglim, because of the Meraglim. Sha'amru b'pihem, ma shalo ra'u b'einehem. Okay. So that's the Medrash, that's the source of the peh and the ayin. Now, knowing this, okay, keeping this as a background, that the cause for the ultimate korban is the meraglim. The sin of the meraglim is peh before the ayin. How did the peh before the ayin actually express itself? By interpreting how the giants saw them. And they saw them as grasshoppers. Now, let's talk about a grasshopper for a minute. What is the basic function of a grasshopper? Well, we've heard about grasshoppers before. They showed up in Egypt. What did they do? The arba. They devoured. Okay, now, interesting. They saw themselves as grasshoppers who devour the healthy, living, life-giving produce, sustenance of the people who live there. Okay? And when the grasshoppers are finished, what's left? Nothing, desolation. You can't live anymore on it, on the land, right? Or you have to wait, the starvation sets in, whatever it is, they devour. And notice in Mitzrayim, which makkah followed Arbe? Huh? Choshech. Where's Choshech? Choshech means you can't see. And Arbe means they devoured everything with their mouths until there was nothing left and then nobody could see. Peh before the ayin, right? Peh before the ayin. So a grasshopper devours. Devours with their mouth. Okay? And the giants, they say, the giants saw us as grasshoppers. In other words, who they were intimidated by saw them, and they're really reporting that they saw them in a very destructive role, which they then played out to Klal Yisrael as devourers. What did they devour in Klal Yisrael? What did they do by reporting hope? They devoured their hope until the people couldn't see. The people couldn't see the brachas of Eretz Yisrael that were right there in front of them. And they became disheartened, and they cried all night, and the eyes and the mouth went out of commission. Now, knowing all this, let's go back to the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. We all know that story, right? So now they had very strange names, Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. Obviously there's something in that, right? Okay. Very strange names. So there's a rich man and he has a party, right? And he wants to invite his friends, and he tells his friend to go invite Kamsa. And the guy goes and he invites Bar Kamsa. Bar Kamsa means the son of Kamsa. And then he throws him out of the party because he couldn't tolerate him. And what does Bar Kamsa do? Bar Kamtza, by the way, an interesting point. Some say that this Bar Kamtza, the reason they didn't want him there is because right before the Churban, the Jewish society was divided into numerous groups. There were the Prushim, who are the frum people, who were everybody. The Chachamim and the bulk, the majority of the population were called the Prushim. They were not a sect, they were everybody. Then there were, however, a few other sects that were betraying the Jewish people. There were the Tzedukim, who were like literalists, who went by Torah Shebichtav, similar to the Karaim. There were the Herodian family and loyalists, which were kind of like the Hellenists, very Romanized. There were the remnants of the Hellenists and all of them, and they were all working against the religious community and befriending Rome, siding with Rome, and instigating Rome against the religious community. And Bar Kamsa, it seems, was one of them. He was a danger. So they didn't want him there. And many of the Chachamim were sitting there, and they did not protest when the host threw out Bar Kamsa. It seems that Bar Kamsa was a danger. He was somebody that was really not on our side at all. And so he went and got angry. The proof is that he was a bad guy. He goes to the Roman, it says Caesar, but it could be, I guess, maybe a governor. I don't know if he went all the way to Rome, but he went in Eretz Yisrael, and he said to the Roman emperor the following, or the Roman governor. He said, the Jews are attempting to rebel against you. Mardu bach Yehudoi. The Jews are rebelling against you. Now, this isn't true. The Jews were the Prushim. These guys were on the side of the Romans. The only people that were not on the Roman side trying to become Romanized were the Prushim. And they had no interest in rebelling. They were scholars and sages and religious people who knew that as long as the nation that governed them allowed them to keep their laws, they're fine. They were not a rebellious people. The proof that they're not rebellious people is that when Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai saw the imminent Churban, and he went to Vespasian, and Vespasian granted him three requests, and he asked, he saved the Jewish people. Make no mistake about it, we underplay what he did. He did, without Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, there'd be no more Jewish nation. They would have died with the Churban. He said, I want Yavne, which was then going to be the hub of where all the Chachamim, all the learners, all the people that study Torah would gather, and from there would be, once the Churban was all over and the Jews were dispersed, and even dispersed all over Israel, but no central government, no Jewish king, no Beis HaMikdash, no Kohen, no Sanhedrin in the Lishchas HaGazit, sitting no Sanhedrin in the chamber, which already had, by the way, disbanded 40 years earlier because the Romans didn't allow them to really rule, or really, you know, like today. They didn't really have power in major areas. They had disbanded. But they realized that without a Sanhedrin, where would the Jewish people, the true Jews, the loyal Jews, find their core? So he asked for Yavne, and then he asked for all the sages that he could gather at Yavne, specifically Rabban Gamliel's family was from David. He would set Rabban Gamliel up as the Nasi, and the Jews would have somebody to look up to that they trusted, and a whole, really, a whole academy of sages that they could turn to for their inner Jewish life without the outer trappings. The fact that Vespasian granted him this wish and allowed all the Chachamim to come to Yavne and saved Rabban Gamliel from the family of David, who was really just a spiritual leader. Eventually, though, they took on more important, you know, other roles that were national roles, is the fact that the Romans had no suspicion about Yavne and its sages. They saved them all. They didn't care. They didn't worry about them. They weren't a threat at all to the Romans. They weren't percolating war. They were actually the pacifists. The Prussian were the pacifists. They did it. They realized it was utterly futile to go up against the Roman Empire, and they had no interest in it. They said, just rule us and give us religious freedom and we're good. We're fine. So he went and spoke to the Roman Caesar, he calls him, and he says, they're rebelling against you, which was a lie. He spoke with his mouth, which wasn't true. And then he made the emperor, he was able to spin the story so the emperor would have proof that this was true. He said, you know what? Send a carbon. You'll see. And they won't offer it. That's how you'll know that they really are rebelling against you. So he sends a carbon. What does Bar Kamsa do? You know what happened. Now listen very carefully what he did. Okay, he sent an egla. Okay, look what the Gemara says. Shadabe muma. He inflicted it with a blemish. Where? Beniv sifasayim. In his mouth. Ve'amrila. And some say, another interpretation, or also, Badukin Sheba'ayin. He blemished it in the mouth and in the eye. Now, that's important. That's where he blemished it, in the mouth and in the eye. Well, who is Bar Kamsa? So Rashi says, Unkelu says back in Shalach, that we saw ourselves kechagovim. Do you know, if you look in the Unkelus, you know what the translation for chagovim is? Kamtsin, grasshoppers. Kamta is a grasshopper. Kamta is a grasshopper. Kamta, chagovim in Unkelus translation is kamtsin. Bar Kamsa means he is the ideological descendant of the Meraglim, who is telling the Roman Emperor that the Jews are unworthy to keep, that they should all be attacked, the Prushim, the bulk of the nation, controlled, overrun. And then he spins the story. First he makes that claim, and then he creates proof so that the Emperor can see that that claim is true. How does he make proof? By slitting the lip or slitting the eye, by taking the lip, making a mum in the lip, a mum in the eye. So what you have here is that you see again that he is the Gemara is telling you by telling that these are the two. This is the sin of Kamta, the grasshopper, that the same sin that caused the Meraglim to betray Eretz Yisrael and to see life in Israel as impossible, so too this man, and many like him, see Torah life in Eretz Yisrael as impossible and are out to destroy it by misleading everyone through the peh and the ayin. Now let's talk about the concept of putting the peh before the ayin. Okay, putting the mouth before the eye. Let's go into it more deeply. How does one evaluate any situation that they observe? Because you know that a situation can take place and three observers can have three totally different evaluations of what happened. How do you make an evaluation? So for example, you see a person, okay, running down the street and jumping on someone, okay, and grabbing the package out of their hand and running away. Okay, how could you understand? One person can say they mugged them. That guy mugged her, okay, let's say it's a old lady. The other one can say she has something, that's her grandson, and she has something poisonous in her pocketbook that she's about to eat, something dangerous, medication she's not supposed to be taking. She won't give him her pocketbook. She won't listen to him, and he ran and took it out of her hands. Maybe that's what happened. Okay? You can make up 10 different scenarios. How do you evaluate the facts in front of your eyes? This is the question. And the real answer is it's random. Each person will evaluate what they see, physical, material, truth, facts, based on a previous perspective. Right? There must be a framework within which to evaluate any material, physical reality, any fact. All right? So that's the question. The question is, when a person speaks, no one speaks in a vacuum. People speak, and speaking is the result of their prejudices, their preconceived ideas, their awareness of other factors. That's what causes a person to speak. So in order to ensure that a person will speak correctly and describe a situation correctly, first, before they're allowed to describe it, they must be given perspective, the big picture. They must be given understanding. That is a fact. So, how could Moshe send them into Eretz Yisrael, in a sense, like with a vacuum, and let them just see and evaluate how they see it? Moshe never sent them into Eretz Yisrael in a vacuum. In fact, that's the point of Parshas Veschanan, which Parshas Haftoras Nachamu comes to be attached to, generally. What is Parshas Veschanan about? If you go into Parshas Veschanan, you will notice that numerous times, and we'll give you a bunch of examples, in this Parsha, what's happening is Moshe is telling Klal Yisrael, see, re'ei be'enecha, go and see. First it starts out with Moshe asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to see the land of Eretz Yisrael. Perek Gimel Pasuk Chaf Hei, Ve'ere es ha'aretz, let me see the land. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers him, you can't see it, you're not going, you can't, Moshe has to cross over. And Hashem says, you can't go into it, but you will see it. Re'ei be'einecha, you'll see with your eyes, but you're not going to go there. And then Moshe goes into a speech to Klal Yisrael. And he says to him over and over again. First he says, in Pasuk Dalet, Perek Dalet, he says, beginning Perek Dalet, Ata Yisrael Shema. Now listen to what I'm about to tell you. And then he switches from the Shema word, which doesn't show up till the end of the Eschan, and Shema Yisrael Shema Ken Shema Chad. And he focuses almost entirely on Re'e. And he tells them, Einechem Haraot Et Asher Asah, right, your eyes who have seen all the things Hashem has done, the battles, the victories, the miracles, you've seen it. Re'e Lamadati Eschem, Perek Dalet Pasuk Hey, look, see, I've taught you so much. These, the wisdom you have, Perek Dalet Pasuk Vav, it's Chachmatchem, it's your wisdom, your intelligence, Be'enei HaGoyim, the Goyim will see the way you live, and they'll learn also what's true. Moshe tells him in Perek Dalet Pasuk Tes, be careful, Pentishkach et hadvarim asher ra'u einechem, be careful, lest you forget the things that your eyes, asher ra'u einecha, that your eyes have seen. Then he tells him, Perek Dalet Pasuk Lamed Hey, regarding Har Sinai, Ata Hare'eta Ladat, you saw it. You saw the greatest revelation of Hashem's power and control, mastery, and now you know it, you have Das. Don't forget what you've seen. You've seen so much. I've shown you so much. And then he goes back to listen to the words of Hashem. So this is a very important pattern, Shema Yisrael. And this is a very important pattern, which means to say, Moshe is telling them, I'm not telling you to listen to Hashem blindly. I'm not starting with Shema. The first Shema in the beginning is listen to me, to what I have to tell you. The second Shema at the end is Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. But I'm not telling you to listen to some facts, blind faith. I'm first going to set it up for you and remind you over and over again what you've seen. You've learned. You've seen the miracles. You've seen the wars. You've seen the victory. You've seen the total mastery of Hashem. You've seen it in Mitzrayim. You've seen it in the desert. You've seen it all around you for so many years. You know the facts. That is your eye. That is your perspective. It's all clear for you. Because you have perspective and you know the truth, then you can listen to the Torah and the mitzvahs and the words of Hashem. Which means to say, Moshe didn't give Klal Yisrael challenges to go into an unknown situation like Eretz Yisrael and just evaluate it in a vacuum. He first set them up with vision. The eye came before the peh. First he gave them vision. He reminded them everything they had seen and learned. Their eyes were functioning. Their eyes had clarity. Then he told them, go to Eretz Yisrael and bring back a report. Keep your eyes before your mouth. What did Klal Yisrael do? The Meraglim do, rather, the 10 Meraglim. They completely forgot the entire preparatory phase to this trip into Eretz Yisrael. Okay? They totally forgot all of the things Hashem had shown them so that they would have perspective. That kind of was, they were blinded to all of those things that they already knew and were taught. And when they came into Eretz Yisrael, they evaluated it from a completely different perspective. And where did they get that perspective from? Where did they get the alternative perspective that they couldn't conquer the land and the land was too powerful for them and they'd never survive in this land despite Hashem's promises, Hashem's assurances, all the previous miracles? What blocked their view of everything they had seen and didn't let them therefore report correctly? What took the place of Hashem's revelations and Hashem's assurances? You know what took the place? The only thing they could see in front of their eyes were the giants, and they saw from the giants' perspective. We were like grasshoppers in their eyes. They were looking at themselves from the giants' perspective. The giants blocked out the heavens, so to speak. The giants blocked out the heavens. They blocked out all the miracles they'd seen. They blocked out all the Gilui Shechina they'd seen. And instead of seeing and reporting based on that proper perspective, they reported based on the giant's view, not based on Hashem's view. They blocked out Hashem's view. Now, so what we're being taught here is the only way to report accurately and to spin a story correctly and describe anything correctly is never to allow anything to block out the truth that we know and we've been taught. Now comes something even more shocking. If that's the case, that what did the Meraglim do now, taking into in deeper? The Meraglim didn't just report inaccurately, they blocked out the perspective of their eyes, right? The giants, in a sense, blocked the sun, blocked God's whole, all God's efforts. So they were, three things really happened. They were given perspective, their ayin was set up first. Then they blocked what their eyes had seen, saw something else that was not true, reported inaccurately, reported from a different perspective, put the pa before the eyes, and then the people heard their perspective, and that perspective was successful in blocking out from the whole nation the original vision. In other words, they took the eyes completely out of functioning for themselves and for the people themselves, and then the people became hopeless. The people cried all night because they couldn't see anymore what they had seen and what they had known. So now you go back to this story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. So here, a little Rashi, just a little Rashi, which goes to show you Rashi knew all this, and he's hinting. He knew that Bar Kamsa was a locust. He knew that the locusts devour with their mouth. He knew that the locust, that the Meraglim blocked all the re'ez in this parsha that they had seen. They had veiled the truth to everybody, which goes to show that self-doubt and the feeling of hopelessness and depression can overshadow so much truth and knowledge and clarity. Rashi says here, he put a mum, shada be muma benifs fasayim. He put a mum in his lips. And by the way, nifs fasayim, that word, the word navi comes from niv. Nifs fasayim really means the speech of the mouth. The speech of the mouth doesn't mean the lips or the tongue or any of the actual physical apparatus. The actual nifs fasayim is like the concept of navi. The lips, he put it, the speech, he put a mum in the speech and the way things can be spoken and the way things will be described. And some say, and some say bedukin sheba'ayin, in the dukin of the eye. What's that? What's a dukin of the eye?
What's the word?
Bedukin sheba'ayin. Alright, so you go into Rashi. Rashi, on this word, bedukin sheba'ayin, he brings a pasuk in Yeshayahu, which perek mem, Shaparshas Nachamu, Haftoras Nachamu. The pasuk Rashi brings to explain what a bedukin sheba'ayin is Yeshayahu mem, pasuk chafbeis. But before I tell you that pasuk, let's give perspective on what the Haftorah of Nachamu is all about. The Haftorah of Nachamu is that Hashem is comforting us, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami, or Zochah to hear the Shabbos, that tells us that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides now to come and gather up his people, the nothing will stand in his way. Nobody, no power, no influence, no schemes of any nation, no the most difficult, you know, complicated constructs and plans of any people to undermine the will of Hashem. Nothing will stand in his way anymore when he comes. By the way, the way Hashem is described as coming is coming into the desert and gathering up the people languishing in the Midbar. Who is that a reference to? Besides us in Golus, the people languishing in the Midbar who couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. So look what it says. Dabru alev Yerushalayim, speak to the heart of Yerushalayim and call to her. Her iniquity has been appeased. She's been punished doubly. It's over. Kol kore b'midbar. So now a voice calls out in the Midbar. That's a reference to the Meraglim, but it's also a reference to us. Clear the way, panu derech, straighten out the wilderness, create a highway for Hashem. Every valley shall be raised, every mountain and hill shall be lowered, and the crooked terrain shall become a plain, and the close mountains will become accessible, passable. What did this happen in the Midbar for Klai Yisrael when Hashem was with them? This was the job of the Anan HaKavod, to flatten the hills, to straighten the pits. In other words, taking them out of the Midbar, getting them through the Midbar and out quickly and efficiently. The time of the Midbar is over. They don't have to languish there anymore. And the glory of Hashem shall be revealed, and everybody shall see that the mouth of Hashem is speaking. V'ru kol basar yachtav ki pi Hashem diber. Hashem is speaking. And nobody will ever again distort the truth with their mouths, because the truth, that is the absolute truth, will be expressed to the world finally, and not any distorted truth, and which is what we are waiting for, because we live in a world of utter distortion against us. But that distortion will come to an end. The peh will be righted, because once Hashem speaks, everybody will know, and everybody will speak in turn correctly. And then what will happen to all those that that were attempting to undermine this plan? All the people of influence, all the people of the grandiose speeches. There'll be nothing. The grass will dry out. The blossoms will wilt. Behold, the people is a grass. The grass will dry out. The word of Hashem will last forever. All of their big talk, all the hot air, it's meaningless. No one will ever be able to influence in their lies, to spin things the wrong way, to put the peh before the ayin so that people will see things incorrectly. No one will ever be able to do that. Behold, the Lord shall come with a strong hand, and his arm rules for him. His reward is with him. Like a shepherd, he will tend his flock, he will gather the lambs, he will carry the nursing ones. And it tells you that Hashem will gather us in, and no one will have influence. And then you go to Pasuk Chafbeis. This is the Pasuk Rashi quotes to explain what Bedukin Ba'ayin is. Of all the entire Tanakh, this is Rashi's choice. It says about Hashem, Hayoshev al Chug Haaretz. He sits on the circle, the sphere, the planet of the land, high above. And how does he look down on those that dwell in the land, that rise up against him with their own ideas and their own perspective? Let me read this again. Hayoshev al Chug Haaretz. Now look what he says. V'yoshveha kechagovim. Here's the pasuk Rashi chooses. And he sees her inhabitants as chagovim, attempting to devour. Hanote kadok shamayim. That veil the heavens with a curtain. Rashi says, you know what bedukin ba'ayin is? What he did to the eye? He created some type of veil, like a cataract, such as the pasuk in Yeshayahu that says that the chagovim spread out a veil to block the heavens. Now that's all Rashi does. He quotes a pasuk in Yeshayahu. He knows what's going on here. He knows that Kamsa is a grasshopper, and he's devouring, he's putting the peh before the ayin. He knows that. And he knows that what he did with the eye is veil the heavens so that all you could see was from the giant's perspective. They blocked out the heavens. And he's telling you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the end, he's embedding the nechama here. In Parshas in Haftorah's Nachamu, Rashi is telling us there's a nechama. In the end, when Hashem comes to gather us in, nobody will have influence. And he sits above, looking down, and you know how he sees all the inhabitants? He does see them as grasshoppers, with no influence. They try to devour, but they'll be helpless. They'll be neutralized. Don't worry that the giants saw us as grasshoppers, and that scared us. Hashem sees them and everybody that tries to misrepresent the truth as grasshoppers. They're the grasshoppers. And you know what those grasshoppers try to do? The Chagavim? Hanote kadok, from the word bedukin. They try to veil the heavens. So the perspective of the heavens can't come through. And Rashi's telling us in this pasuk, and in the story of Kamsa, which you read on Tisha B'Av, by quoting this pasuk, he's secretly hinting to you the nechama. All these chagavim, they will be completely, they will wither away like nothing. And everything they try to do will be for naught. He's telling you that in the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. Bar Kamsa was the son of the chagavim, of the grasshoppers. He tried to change, but you know what? He succeeded. He succeeded for a while. He spun it out of control, and the Romans came and destroyed this peace-loving nation that never meant to rebel. They would have happily taken foreign rule as long as their religion was respected. It wasn't until Hadrian, by the way, this is important historically, it wasn't until Hadrian, 150 years after the Churban, when they were in when Hadrian created laws, he promulgated laws to prohibit them from keeping the Torah, and that's where you get Rabbi Akiva with the fish and the water and all that stuff, and the Harugei Malchus. When Hadrian did promulgate laws to make them abandon the Torah, then the city of Beitar, which was the stronghold, rose up and fought, and the destruction of Beitar in Rabbi Akiva's days was considered as great as the Chorban. It was a huge massacre with hundreds and thousands of people dead. But that was the only time that they actually rebelled. But then the decree was sealed by then, and that was the end of any attempt to have maintain a life in Eretz Yisrael till our day, basically. But Rashi is putting the Nechama into the story of Kamtza. He's a Kamtza, he's a grasshopper. He put a mum in the peh and a mum in the eye, and he veiled the eye like in Yeshayahu. But in the end, Hashem sees all those as devourers, grasshoppers, who will have no more influence. And Hashem's mouth will speak, and everything will be restored to proper perspective. And that's really the definition, my grandfather explains, of nechama. Nachamu, nachamu, double lashon. The concept of nechama is to change perspective, to change the way you can see something. Nechama doesn't mean that you can necessarily take away all the pain. What is the job of a person who comes to be Menachem? The job of someone who comes to be Menachem is to change their perspective of the Avel, and that they shouldn't see it all as some type of evil, some type of punishment, some type of random act by a God who doesn't care. All of those things are the perspective that leads to then the speech and how we spin things and how we explain things. So the concept of nechama is to make sure the person is seeing something from the proper perspective. That is the concept and the definition really of the word nechama. Now, by the way, you're not allowed to be menachem a person, and don't even try, when their dead is in front of them, because they can't have a different perspective at that moment. But with time, they might be able to see something from another point of view. And that means going back to before the peh begins to explain what happened. The eye has to see, has to have perspective. And that's the job of Nechama. So here we're told, Nachamu, Nachamu. What's really happening with Nachamu is Yeshayahu is telling us there will come a day where everybody's perspective will be reordered. And then everybody's speech will be in order. And the way everything is described and known will be in order. That's Nachamu. We need a double Nechama. Nechama for all the tsaras that we went through, and the Chama for not knowing why it had to be when we were going through it. The physical pain and the emotional, intellectual, spiritual, psychological anguish. Not knowing why it had to be. It's two types of Nechamas. The actual suffering and the mental anguish. And both will be put into perspective. So here you see that we're being told that we're being comforted. We're being told that the world we live in and we know so well, which is a world of distortion, will run its course, and then things will change. And we have to know that our job here, this is the main thing. What is our job? Our job is to be very responsible with how we describe things, and know that we can only describe things based on an earlier understanding and an earlier perspective. How do you get the earlier perspective? You have to learn our Chumash, our Navi, our Sifrei Mus, the Musar, the ethics and the morals. Only with that perspective can a person come to any situation and have any chokhmah about it. And that's really the definition of what we say, at least the kids say it every morning, Reishis chokhmah, Yiras Hashem. The beginning of any real chokhmah of how you explain something, how you understand something, the perspective you give something, preceding that is Yiras Shamayim. Otherwise, everything after that will be all distorted and could be dangerous and destructive and very unhelpful, as opposed to, helpful and productive helping build things up. So our job is to create the original perspective. Once we have that, we can be trusted to explain, to describe the life around us, the things we see, the way we live, And that's also, by the way, that's why it says, you know, we say it takes one to know one. A person who's, for example, motivated by chesed and rachmanis and forgiveness and is generous of spirit will see other people's behavior in the same light. A person that is always annoyed and intolerant and judgmental will see other people's behavior in the same light. So it's all about creating who we are, and then everything that comes from us and the way we see things, the way we explain things, the way we pass on things can be trusted. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.